Welcome back to the Build My Speaking Biz Bootcamp. I'm Sean Ellis from Succeed Speaking, and today's session is going to be a crash course in the nitty-gritty details of running a speaking business. Like everything else about speaking, this is not rocket science, but there are some unique details and ways of doing business that you need to know, and it's better to learn now than to learn the hard way. So we're going to cover five main areas today, starting in the pre-booking stage with setting your fee and working with speakers bureaus, or should you work with speakers bureaus? That's actually the question we're going to answer. But then we'll move on into the booking and post-booking phase, and we'll talk about contracts and payment terms, also what planners want so you can wow them and get the spin-offs and referral business that really will help you explode your business and grow it exponentially. We'll also talk about what to do between the contract and the booking so you're making the right preparations there. So let's get started. Let's dive right in here and talk about setting your fee, because this is something that everyone wants to know. How do I set my fee? And we are talking about building a speaking business after all. And to have a business, you need revenue. So this is very important. And plus, it's also well known that speakers can make good money, right? Many speaker training programs actually use big numbers to reel you in. You know, hey, make $5,000 or $10,000 an hour, or make $100,000 this year, make $1 million this year. These kind of numbers are thrown around. There's a big emphasis on numbers. So there are two schools of thought on setting your fee. First, you set your fee at a premium and justify it with the quality of your materials and ultimately your delivery on stage. This is really a marketing approach to setting your fee, because you're using your fee to project a certain kind of image about yourself and your speaking business. And, you know, naturally, a $25,000 speaker is going to be perceived to be better established and have more credibility than a $2,500 speaker. Just think about it. A Lexus is made by Toyota, but which one is seen as having better quality and being more valuable? Well, it's the Lexus. And yes, there are differences. There are legitimate differences there, but they're both made by Toyota, and there are some similar components there. But, you know, the Lexus LS series, for instance, that's kind of their flagship car. It has several similarities with the Toyota Avalon, which is Toyota's flagship sedan. But some car reviewers have actually called the Avalon a poor man's LS. And it's been said that the Avalon actually offers 85% of what the LS offers, but at about 55% of the price. So the price and the Lexus shield have a lot to do with setting the value of the Lexus. And much the same applies with speakers. You know, yes, there are core differences between the cars, and there are core differences between a $75,000 speaker and someone with very similar content who speaks for $7,500. But a big part of it is image and marketing. You have to know that. So if you want to go this route and enter the market as a premium speaker, then you just have to be ready to make some initial investments to project the right image. And of course, you also better be able to deliver on stage, or otherwise this approach will backfire on you very quickly. But this can be done, and there are speakers out there who come right out of the gates as a $10,000, $25,000 speaker. It just depends on what you want to do, what feels right to you, and what fits with your goals. So that's one approach to setting your fee. That's the marketing approach. Now, the second approach is you start low and you let your fee grow organically over time. This is the economic approach to setting your fee. It's based on good old supply and demand. So you start out speaking for free, and then maybe you go up to $250 or $500, then $1,000, $2,500, and so on. I actually know of one speaker who is now a leader in his field, and he's kind of cornered this little part of the market. But he started out this way, and you know, he's now a 12,000 $500 speaker. He makes $12,500 per speech. But it took him about 10 years to get there. And there's nothing wrong with that. I actually applaud speakers who do it this way, who are willing to put in the time and hone their craft and earn that fee. You know, they work their way up. But actually, what I would recommend to you is a hybrid of the marketing and economic approaches. And the way that works is something like this. You start out doing a few events for free to make sure you're comfortable with your content and delivery, because I think you would agree, you don't want to be experimenting on stage if you're asking for a $25,000 fee, right? Even a $10,000 fee. That's for your sake and the client's sake. Of course, the client is not paying you to experiment with them, but you don't want to be doing that either, because that puts a lot of pressure on you. So, you know, you start out then speaking for free, and then either when you feel comfortable enough where you're really ready to begin marketing yourself, or when people start to ask, hey, how much do you charge to speak? Then you set your fee at $2,500 and start building from there. And I say $2,500 because that fee will say that you're professional, not an amateur. And it will also keep you in a range where, number one, there are plenty of opportunities for you to speak. And number two, where you can stand out among your competition if you build your business the way that I've talked about, the way that I've shown you in this program. Because if you follow the steps that we've gone through so far in this Build My Speaking Biz Bootcamp, what I'm showing you how to do is build a solid professional speaking business. Okay, I'm not showing you how to just throw something together and go out there and speak. That, if you do it that way, then yeah, you might you know need to start at $500 and $1,000 and really work your way up. But if you do things the right way, you put together the right tools in your toolbox, all those sorts of things, there's no reason you can't start at $2,500 after you do, you know, half a dozen, however many events you need to do to feel comfortable. But the first time you really put a price tag on it, you go in at $2,500. And then still, you're going to continue to, you know, get better. At $2,500, you're not going to be perfect. At $75,000, that speaker is not perfect. You're always working to get better, and you'll get better with your content and your delivery and engaging your audience. Practice makes perfect. There's just no way around that. But you start at $2,500, and then you'll just go up gradually over time. So then that supply and demand thing kicks in again. And at some point, you might be ready to make a big jump. So maybe you go $2,500, $3,500, $5,000. Now all of a sudden, you feel like, okay, I've really got this thing together. I've got the right materials. I'm going to jump up to the $10,000 category. So that's where that marketing approach comes back in again. But anytime you think about raising your fee, and this actually it applies the very first time you put a price tag on yourself, but anytime you think about raising your fee, two things you need to do. Number one, you need to be aware of your competition in this new fee category and make sure that you can compete effectively. And part of that has to do with your content and the value you're delivering. But a big part of that, again, is your marketing materials, because the first place you're going to compete is on first impression. And if there's, let's say, two $2,500 speakers here, you and someone else, and this speaker looks like a $5,000 speaker, this speaker looks like maybe a $500 speaker, but they're both at $2,500, of course, the one who looks like he's got it all together or she's got it all together is going to be the one who gets the first look. So you need to be thinking about that. The second thing is you need to have some word of mouth or buzz that will help you position you above your competition. Now, at some point, you can actually get to the stage where you've got so much word of mouth and buzz that you've really identified yourself and positioned yourself so your competition is not even relevant. And we've talked about that along the way, how you really just eliminate your competition, then you don't even have to worry about that. But until you get to that level, It is something you're going to need. The testimonials. It's going to be very hard to convince somebody to pay, you know, $5,000 for a speaker, even $2,500 for a speaker, if there aren't some testimonials there. And that's a big part of why you do these free events anyway. Aside from just building up your own confidence, you want to get some testimonials that will back you up and makes it easier to justify your fee. So those are some general guidelines about setting your fee. Now let's shift gears and talk specifically about you and what matters to you in setting your fee. For one thing, you need to go back to our very early work where you're identifying your target audience. Who is it that you want to reach? Where are they? Where are those people? What organizations would need to hire you to get you in front of those people? And then how much are those organizations spending on their speakers? Those are some things you need to also think about as you're setting your fee. And by the way, you can find out how much those organizations are spending by looking at their websites, find their past conference and convention programs, and then see who spoke there. Then you go out and find out how much those speakers charge. And you can do that often. You can look at Speakers Bureau websites and see if their fee is listed there. Also, you can look at a website called speakermix.com. It used to be SpeakerWiki. It's now speakermix.com. And you'll have to register there, but it's a free account. And then you can see literally thousands of speakers' fees. So that's a good way to do some market research. But that'll give you some idea of what the market can bear in terms of speaker fees, what your market can bear, because the type of speaker you are, the category you're in, the kind of clients you're going after, that's going to have a significant impact on how you set your fee. Because, you know, you might conclude that the low fee in your market is $5,000, that you don't see anybody getting booked who has a fee of less than that. So in that case, you're not going to want to price yourself less than that, because, you know, why, if they're spending routinely $5,000, why would they need to look at a $2,500 speaker? So you need to price yourself at $5,000 just to get their attention and be a part of that conversation. On the other side, you might find that the high fee in your market is $5,000. So then you need to price yourself below that. And by the way, if that's not satisfactory, if you realize, wow, in this market, it just doesn't look like I can get the fee that I need to achieve my goals, then you might need to look at another market or develop products so you've got some additional revenue streams to compensate for what's lacking in the fee. And by the way, this brings us naturally to the next thing that you need to look at related to your fee, and that is, what are your personal financial goals? Because the market is important, but you need to make sure that you can be happy and get paid what you believe you're worth so you can achieve your goals. So ask yourself this: how much do you want to earn in a year? How many dates do you want to do? Because, you know, are you totally happy being on the road 250 days a year? Or is it a case where you really only want to be out there maybe 20 dates a year? Well, then you do the math and you know what fee you need to aim for per event. But I mentioned product quickly earlier. Remember, the most successful speakers do not rely solely on live speaking fees for their income. Only a few speakers can ever get to that $50,000 and up fee category. But you can make very good money, and I'm talking about high six figures, even seven figures, doing 30 to 50 dates a year for $5,000, and then you've got supporting products and services to go along with it. So you've probably got a number in mind right now for the fee that you'd like to start with, and maybe the fee that's your goal. Well, just go with that number that's in your gut right now. You take into consideration everything we just talked about here, and then go with that number and see how it feels once you get out there. See how it feels to you. Do you feel comfortable with that? And see how it feels to prospective clients as you're reaching out. And not that you're going to ask them, hey, what do you think about my fee? But you'll probably find out how they're feeling about it if you realize that your fee is prohibitive and you keep losing deals because of your fee. Or if your fee seems to be hitting a sweet spot and you're doing really well and you're able to compete effectively at that fee. So that's those are some things you need to be thinking about personally as you set your fee. And let me just give you now three more quick tips or thoughts about your fee before we move on, because these are some things, just common items that come up. Number one, many speakers struggle with the idea that, you know, I don't know if I'm worth that much. Why would somebody pay me $2,500 or $5,000 or $15,000 for a one-hour speech? You know, I'm really not that good. I don't know as much as him or her. I don't have the best-selling book. Well, two things about that. One, it's not what you believe you're worth, because you're not writing the check. It's what your clients believe you're worth. And your knowledge, your expertise, your ability to communicate something meaningful, your ability to connect with the audience, I'm betting you're more valuable to your clients than you think you are. So remember that. But also, let me just tell you a quick story about the famous artist Pablo Picasso. And I'm not sure if this story is true or not, but the point is valid in any case. The story goes that a woman came up to Picasso and asked him if she would sketch something for her on a piece of paper. So he quickly sketched it out, gave it back to her, and said, "That'll be $10,000. Now the woman was just astounded. She said, "You know, you just took 5 minutes to do that sketch. Isn't $10,000 a lot for just 5 minutes of work?" And Picasso said back to her, "The sketch may have taken me 5 minutes, but the learning took me 30 years. That is exactly the same for you as a speaker. You've invested countless hours, weeks, months, years, maybe even a lifetime, developing the expertise or experience or the story that you share as a speaker. And you're going to spend even hours, maybe even days, preparing for each individual speech you do. So don't fall for that lie that, you know, speakers get paid $5,000 or $10,000 an hour, whatever their fee is per hour. Speakers do make good money, at least the successful ones do. But remember what goes into it. So when you quote your fee, number one, you need to remember that you've got something of value to your client. The saying goes that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So you are going out there. People are going to hire you because you've got experience that they need. You've got expertise that they need. So you have value there. Never doubt that. But the second thing is remember what your fee is paying for. It's not paying for your time for an hour. It's paying for everything that's gone into your life and your story, your career, whatever it may be. Everything that's culminated to allow you to deliver that message for an hour. So never doubt the value of what you're delivering. Number two, the second thing I should say, we're shifting gears here now to the second of the three little extra points I wanted to talk about, and it's negotiation. Because you know what they say, everything is negotiable, and that includes your speaking fee. So you won't be around very long as a speaker before somebody says, "Hey, would you take this?" And they'll ask you to come down on your fee. You also don't have to be around the speaking world very long before you're going to hear speakers talking about what's known as fee integrity. And what that means is you want to keep your fee as consistent as possible, because every time you negotiate, you're taking a bite out of your market value. So a speaker who says he's $15,000, but where it's known that, you know, he's doing most of his dates for $5,000, that speaker's kidding himself if he says he's $15,000, because he's really a $5,000 speaker. And it's the same if you put a price tag on and it says you're $2,500, but you're doing a lot of events for free, you're really still pretty close to a free speaker. So you need to keep that in mind with negotiation. Your market value is at stake here. And sometimes you will need to negotiate. Sometimes you'll want to negotiate. But you've got to be prepared to say no. You've got to have a limit. And I know it's hard when somebody's, you know, maybe offering you some fee that's decent, but it's not up to par. It's going to be hard to say no to that as you're getting started, but it pays off in the long run, believe me. But, you know, meeting budgets are tight. So the negotiation, it's going to happen. Here's how I advise you to deal with it. Aside from, you know, sometimes you've just got to say no, but those times when you do want to negotiate, find a way to justify it always. So it's not simply a case where somebody, your fee's $15,000. They say, hey, will you do it for $5,000? And you just say, yeah, I'll do that. You never, never want to do that. If you are going to negotiate, find some way, a legitimate justification. So you can share that with somebody. If somebody ever says, hey, I heard you did this for this fee, you can say, oh yeah, well, it was because of X. And also the client knows that, okay, well, he didn't just come down on his fee or her fee. I know she did it because we made up for it this way. And here's what I'm talking about. Somebody wants you to do it for a lower fee. You say, okay, well, you're asking me to take a 10% cut on my fee. To do that, I'm willing to do it if you'll provide me with a copy of your attendee list so I can send some information to them. Or I'll do it, but I know that you're going to have a video crew there. I would like a video, a professional quality HD video, a copy of the video of my presentation, because now all of a sudden you've taken care of your demo video need potentially and save yourself thousands of dollars. So that's worth it to you. But you see what I'm saying? You might do the same thing if it's a local event, if I can drive there or if I can get in and out on the same day, then okay, it makes sense for me to do it for a lower fee. But that way you can always explain realistically, legitimately why you negotiated in that isolated incident. And that way you're still, your fee is still solid. Just there are these particular incidents where it just made sense for you to do the event for a little less. But I recommend that you stay as consistent as possible with your fee. And when someone approaches you about negotiation, the first thing you should always think about is there a way I can add value to this engagement instead of reducing the fee? So, you know, maybe you say, okay, well, I'm going to do this keynote, but also I'll do a follow-up teleconference with all of your attendees 30 days later, or I'll do two or three of those where it's going to take some extra effort on your part, but you keep the fee the same and it doesn't take a lot of extra time. You don't have to travel. Maybe you even, it's just as simple as you offer a copy of your ebook for all of the attendees, or you offer to do a breakout session on the same day. Because when people ask you to negotiate, I said that meeting budgets are tight. That's true. But a lot of times it's more about perceived value than it is about real funding issues. So if you can increase the value of this engagement, of their investment, then a lot of times you'll find that fee issue goes away. And it may even be, I've seen it before where all of a sudden this organization can combine a couple of different budgets. So maybe they've got the meeting budget that it really is limited, that we can only pay you, we can only pay you X dollars as a speaker, but oh, you're throwing in your ebook. Well, that actually could be covered by our education budget. So we'll get 70% of your fee. We're going to cover it out of our meeting budget. That extra 30%, we can actually cover it from our education budget because that'll cover the ebooks you're providing. So always be thinking creatively like that. But it was vividly clear to me just a few months ago when a speaker turned what was going to be a $10,000 or maybe $15,000 deal. This is where the client came to me and that was the most they could do, you know, $10,000 to $15,000. The speaker turned that into a $50,000 deal simply by adding some follow-up webinars and case studies and a few other pieces of content. So they crafted a real solution that client didn't even know they needed. They listened to the client, they heard the client's problems, and they said, well, here's the solution you really need. Here's what it's going to deliver for you in terms of benefits, but here's the fee on that. Here's the investment on that. And then you position yourself as a real trusted advisor to the client. So you're doing more than just going in and speaking for 45 minutes. So these are some things to keep in mind when negotiation comes up. And it will. Just be prepared for it. It's much better to be prepared and have some ideas in mind than get caught off guard with it. So one last thing here before we leave the topic of setting your fee, and that is travel expenses. How do you handle that? Well, your clients should always pay your travel expenses. There's no question about that. But there's a real move toward including travel expenses in the speaker's fee, or in other words, creating this flat fee package. And it's flat, with the exception of hotel. Clients usually will pay the hotel in addition because they've got a master rate there, a master account, and a discounted rate. So it'd be a flat fee plus the hotel accommodations. And this is what I would recommend that you do. Clients like it because they don't have to worry about any surprises after the event. You know, what if that speaker sends me their invoice for expenses and there's a $150 massage on there, or there's a steak dinner and excessive drinking, which that I would not recommend the night before of an event in any case, but it's happened. I'm telling you this because it's happened, and I, as an agent, have had to work this out between the client and the speaker. So if you've got a flat fee, it's easier for the client. They don't have to be surprised. They don't have to know what you spent your money on. They pay you the fee, and then it's up to you. And by the way, that then makes it easier for you, because it's easier for the client because they don't have to worry about it. It's easier for you because now you don't have to send your receipts and invoice for reimbursement after every event. So then that's a whole other bookkeeping hassle for you, and now it's another collection issue. So this way, if you just charge the flat fee, and now if you want to travel cheap, well, maybe you make a few extra dollars on the event. Or if you want to travel first class and spend a little bit more, well, you know, that's on your dime. It's coming out of your proceeds. But the way you do this, by the way, is find a good average of what it would take for your airfare, your rental car, your meals, whatever your necessary expenses are. You know, price out. Maybe you want to price an event to the East Coast, to the West Coast, and Central, and try to find a good average there that most of the time this is going to cover my expenses. And I know that the further I go, then there might be a little excess there. The closer I am, there might be a little excess there, more left over for me. The further away I go, there's a chance that the expenses may actually exceed what I had built into my fee to cover my expenses. But in the end, it's going to all work out. It's going to all average out in the end. So that's how you do that. And then, you know, if you're going to quote your fee at $2,500, then you would just say, my fee is $2,500 plus hotel accommodations. And then you cover everything else. The client books your hotel room, and then everything else is up to you. And by the way, you could even set this, you could set different fees for different geographic areas based on where the event is. So maybe for a local event within this radius, your fee is just $2,000 because you know you're not going to have to spend anything on airfare. For West Coast, if you're coming from the East, maybe your West Coast fee is $3,000 instead of $2,500, and then East Coast or Midwest is $2,500. Just think about that. Figure out what makes sense for you. But it's pretty simple, right? You kind of follow what I'm saying here? Okay. Well, let's move on now. So we've covered the fee issue. That's an important one. Now I want to briefly talk about speakers bureaus, because every speaker wonders about them. I run a speakers bureau here, as you know, the Speakers Group, and almost every day I get an email from a speaker or speakers asking to be listed on our roster. And I ask speakers when they submit their information, I say, hey, what is the number one thing you're looking for in a speakers bureau? What is the biggest challenge with your business? And always, or I should say most of the time, 95% of the time at least, their answers do not line up with what we do as a speakers bureau. And that's the real problem here. Most speakers, even the most established ones, misunderstand what speakers bureaus are really about. So I'm not going to spend much time on speakers bureaus during this session, because I don't think you should spend much time on speakers bureaus at this stage in building your speaking business. Some people will say that speakers bureaus are kind of like a bank. When you need them, they don't want you. When you don't need them, well, there they are. They're begging for your business. Well, here are the three things that I think you need to know about working with speakers bureaus right now at this stage as you're getting started. The first thing you have to know is what's going on in their world. And that is, number one, they're overwhelmed with speaker inquiries. I just told you, you know, almost daily that we're getting inquiries from speakers who want to be listed. So you've got to know that. It's not as if they're just sitting around herding for speakers, because most of them, the speakers that do end up on their roster, they find them proactively anyway. They're not relying on speakers who reach out to them. So if you know there's this crowd of speakers pursuing them, then you know you need to do something unique to stand out. And not, if you are going to approach them, don't just approach them as, hey, I'm a speaker, I'd love to get listed on your roster, because you know, well, so are hundreds of other people that are all saying the same thing. So at least learn a little bit more about that bureau and approach them with some specific ways you could help them. And that brings us to number two. The second thing you need to know about bureaus, what would help a bureau? Well, what you need to know is what bureaus care about is booking dates. That's what keeps a speaker's bureau in business, is the commission that they earn on every booking. So adding a speaker to their roster does not get them revenue. It's booking dates that gets them revenue. And they don't care most of the time. They don't care who they book. They just need to book a speaker and get a commission. So you can't really expect that they would just gladly, I'd love to promote you. No, they'll promote whoever it is that gets them bookings. So what you need to talk about then is, how are you going to help them get bookings? Because if you just go to them and say, I want you to help me get bookings, then, well, all of a sudden you're thinking about you, they're thinking about them. So think of yourself as the vendor, and they are the client. You want them as a client. In this case, a speaker's bureau is your client. That's how you need to think about them. So if you go to a client, remember, you've got to be asking, what is it that they want? What do they need? They want to book dates, so how can you help them do that? That's the second thing you need to keep in mind. Third thing, this goes back to your business. Only about 10 to 20% of bookings, well, let me rephrase this. Of the speakers who are, quote, in with speakers bureaus, the ones who are doing a good bit of business with speakers bureaus, still only 10 to 20% of their business is coming from bureaus. You got that? 10 to 20%. In other words, they're generating 80 to 90% of their business on their own. So as you can see, that's why I say don't spend much time on speakers bureaus, because even when it's working, it's still not going to be a huge percentage of your business. Now, if this was a case where one client could generate 10 to 20% of your business, well, I'd say, sure, maybe it's worth pursuing. But we're talking about 10 to 20% of your business coming from, you know, a variety out of hundreds of speakers bureaus. So you've got to approach hundreds of speakers bureaus to get 10 to 20% of your business. And it's just not what I recommend. This is my opinion. You can take it for what it's worth. But coming from the bureau world and also having managed speakers, so I know what it's like to be on your side of things, I just think there are better things you can be doing. And I think you need to focus on building your own business at this stage. And if you go about that the right way and start getting results, then the speakers bureaus will find you. And once you've reached this certain level of success, it may be that the right speakers bureau comes along and you find a partner, maybe even want to ultimately go exclusive with a bureau, and they're going to help you take your business from this level to the next level. But where you are right now, you need to be focused on building your own business, and don't think a speakers bureau will do that for you. So in the words of Forrest Gump, that's all I have to say about that. And let's move on now and talk about the business of booking an event, and then what happens after you book an event. So for starters, we're going to talk about contracts and payment terms. And this is about as boring as a high school math class. So I apologize, but you've got to have contracts. Just like you need to set your fee to get money coming in the door, contracts and also payment terms, these are the devices that are going to, they're going to secure the deal so you can get that money coming in the door. So let's talk about that. The first thing you need to do is make sure that you have a contract that addresses all the important details of your engagement. beyond providing legal protection, what the contract really does is it sets the expectations for both you and the client. Because rarely in all my years, I've seen a couple cases where we actually had to get into the legalities of a contract and engage an attorney or something of that sort. But rarely does it ever become a legal issue. But what it always does is it sets the expectations. And that will just simply, it prevents you getting some feedback after an event where a client says, you know, I'd really hoped you would stay for the reception. Well, if the reception wasn't in the contract, then there's no way you could be expected to know that that was important to the client. If it was in the contract, well, now the client has a valid issue because you're the one who didn't live up to expectations or who didn't follow what had been outlined. So that's why the number one thing you need on a contract is your exact itinerary. So don't leave room for any surprises where, you know, the client might spring a meet and greet on you. If it's not in the contract, you can't be expected to do that. And the client should not reasonably be disappointed by that. But just the same, if there was a meet and greet there, if you agreed to it, well, then on the day of the event, if you don't feel like it, it doesn't matter. You've still got to do that meet and greet. So have the exact itinerary on the contract. Our contracts actually state under the itinerary that this is the exact itinerary and any changes must be agreed upon by the speaker and the client. So, I mean, it's down to the minute, not just on March 31st, Bob will speak for 1 hour. Okay, that's bad. What you want it to be is on March 31st at 10 a.m., Bob will speak for 1 hour. At 11 a.m., he may depart the event. It needs to be that specific on your itinerary. That's the first thing your contract needs. The second thing, make sure your contract has a force majeure clause. And this is a provision that covers you and the client in the event of a natural disaster or some other unforeseen disruption. This really became an issue after 9/11 because at that time, the flights were canceled, people didn't know if they wanted to travel, and it really shook up meetings and events in the U.S., but even globally. And the contracts at that time didn't have any language to cover it. So this way, with a force majeure clause, you know exactly what happens. It's got the provision in there that if for some reason this event can't be held, then the contract terms carry over for a period of 1 year and we can reschedule the event. Or it may say that, okay, we're wiping the whole thing out. There are a variety of ways you can approach it. It doesn't matter. Just make sure there is a clause there so that that's covered. And most of the sample contracts you will see, they have that built in there. So number three, payment terms. Your contract obviously needs to have the payment terms in there. And the essential detail of payment terms, you need to collect a deposit up front, you know, within 2 weeks. It's typically 50% within 7 to 14 days of issuing the contract. And then you need to collect the full balance before you actually go on stage. And this is something, this is the beauty of payment terms in the speaking world, because, you know, my father is a chiropractor, and, you know, I'm always talking to him, and collections are always an issue for him, and just as it is for other medical professions and in a lot of businesses, collections are a real issue. With speaking, collections should not be an issue because you always want to collect full payment in advance. And most of the time, the balance is due 7 to 14 days prior to the event date. Worst case, I shouldn't say worst case, but if you're not comfortable with that or if a client won't do that, at least make sure you get paid. They hand you a check before you take the stage. Because otherwise, you don't want to be going around chasing payment from a client on site at the event. And then you especially don't want to be chasing them down afterward, because even if you've got it in the contract, it can just get messy and waste a lot of time. But some clients will ask questions about this. Most actually will not. But I want to tell you, some will ask questions about it, especially if they're not experienced working with a professional speaker. They may not understand these payment terms. So let me just give you a couple things you can say, have in your back pocket if these occurrences come up. Because remember, this is all about trying to prepare you for things rather than have you be caught off guard and get surprised by them. So if they ask you, you know, why do you need a deposit? Well, the answer to that is pretty simple. The answer is, I'm going to remove this date from my calendar and decline any inquiries that come in for that date. So the deposit confirms that you are committed to this engagement. Simple as that. That is non-negotiable. Now, what about full payment before the event? Why do you need to get paid in full? Well, the answer to that is it's a standard business practice among speakers and keeps us from having to wonder if we're going to have to become collection agents when we get on a plane to speak in an event. So it actually ends up working better for everyone this way. So that way, when I get to your event, I have nothing on my mind but giving you 100% when I take your stage. And by the way, just so you're comfortable, you add this in, just so you're comfortable and fully confident, the terms of the contract protect you in the event I can't make it or something weird happens. Your money will be refunded. So this is, you're fully protected, but this is just a way to make sure everything runs smoothly. So those are just a couple things there about payment terms. And by the way, as far as contracts go, you can search on the web for sample speaker agreement or sample speaker contract, and you'll probably find a few different models that you could work from, or just email me and I'll send you one. But that's the essence of a contract. There are going to be some other legal terms in there, of course, who's responsible for taxes and insurance and this and that. But make sure the itinerary is outlined exactly. Make sure you've got a force majeure clause, even though it's, you know, the nature of it is hopefully it will never, ever come into effect. But it may, and you want to be prepared. Third, make sure the payment terms are clear so there's no surprises about that. But a good agreement, what it really boils down to is it just makes everything else work smoothly. So if you get that good solid agreement in place up front, work through the issues if you need to discuss things with a client. Much better to have those discussions on the front end over an agreement than it is, you know, between now and the event or even after the event where things just get messy again because expectations weren't met. So set the expectations right up front. And, you know, as we know, just think about it. Most of the time when we're disappointed, when we get upset about something, it's because something didn't live up to our expectations. You know, we were looking for something that we really shouldn't have been looking for. So an agreement, a contract, heads that off on the front end so you never get into that issue with your client. So that's what I wanted to tell you about contracts and payments. And now let's transition on, still on the same theme here, talk about setting expectations. Let's talk about some other expectations you need to set. So at the same time you confirm the booking, that's when you're going to send out the contract and invoices. Here are some other things that I would recommend you include in an email, or actually you may discuss these on the phone with the client too, but I would recommend outlining them on an email so the client can actually see it written out. So maybe the same email you send them that says, hey, thank you for this booking. To confirm our engagement, I've attached the contract and invoices. Also, and then you outline the following. One, when will you send promotional materials? Because a client's probably going to need your photo, maybe your bio, presentation summary to put in their brochure, maybe on their website. They're going to need that. So just tell them up front, I will send my promotional materials as soon as we receive the signed contract and deposit payment from you. So that lets them know that, hey, you know that they need this stuff and you've got it on your calendar to send it. The trigger is you're just waiting for them to send back the signed contract and deposit payment. So that tells them that. Then they don't have to follow through on that, of course. And then that way they don't have to come chase you down later on. Second thing is the timing. Let them know the timing of when you're going to send the advanced questionnaire, or actually you may attach the advanced questionnaire here. Let them know the timing of when you need it back. And the advanced questionnaire, by the way, I should probably explain, you're going to want to send this out because you want to know as much about your audience as possible. Your client has surely told you some things about it as you've been discussing this engagement, but the questionnaire will dig even a little bit deeper and find out, you know, who are they exactly? And we're talking age range, geographically, where are they coming from? What is it they want? What are their objectives here? What do they need? These are things you want to get on the questionnaire, and also logistical details. You know, make sure you get the address of where the event's being held, the exact time, what time will somebody meet me at my hotel room to go down to the not meet you at your hotel room, meet you in the hotel lobby to go to the conference room or whatever it may be. Those are all the things that are going to be covered in the questionnaire. And by the way, just the same as with the contract, you can find some samples out there online or just email me and I'll send you a sample that you can use. But on the same email, you say, you know, please complete the attached questionnaire at least 30 days prior to your event so I can prepare accordingly. So you cover that. And now the client knows what's expected of them. The travel itinerary. Tell them, you know, I'll send my flight details approximately 2 weeks prior to the event. And planners will sometimes ask for it sooner. But the explanation is simply, you know, my schedule can change with short notice due to booking inquiries. So we're often unable to confirm travel until about 2 weeks out. Now, as you're starting out, sure, that may not come up too much. But as you get busier, it's the reality of it is you may not be able to book your flight until 2 weeks out because a lot of events get booked on short notice and usually not less than 2 weeks in advance sometimes. But, you know, if you are going to book your flights in advance, you're probably either going to want to book a refundable ticket so you can change it if necessary, or otherwise you're going to, you know, you're going to have to absorb the change fee. And, you know, maybe you take a chance on that, especially if you're doing a flat fee. You say, well, I'd rather book the cheapest fare and I'll gamble on having to reschedule. But in any case, as far as the client's concerned, tell them you'll send their flight details approximately 2 weeks prior to their event. So that way they know when to expect them. And then finally, go ahead and tell them now, I'll send my receipts and travel invoice within 2 weeks after the event. And again, that's a moot point if you're opting for the flat fee arrangement. But those are just some other expectations, some things that are key components of an engagement, of a speaking engagement. And it's better to just let people know up front, let the clients know, here's how this is going to operate. So when you'll send promotional materials, the timing of the advance questionnaire, when you need that back, when you'll send your travel itinerary, and then how you will reimburse for travel expenses if appropriate. Because these are the things that meeting planners are going to be asking for if you don't answer them now. So just answer them up front, then everybody knows what's going on. And you still may need to follow up on some of these items, but at least it's been outlined. So now those are all the expectations. Now let's transition. You've got the event booked, okay? You sent out your contract, you got paid your fee, you took care of all the advanced details. Now it's showtime. Let's wrap up this session on the business of speaking by talking about what planners want from you once you book the date. So in other words, what will it take to wow them and get the raving testimonial that you want? Presentation skills aside, here are the five things planners told me that they want from their speakers. So this is straight from your prospective clients. Here we go. These are just the top five things that you need to deliver if you really want to wow your client. Number one, know your audience and speak to them. By far, the top request from planners was for speakers to know their audiences and tailor their speeches accordingly, even if just slightly. You know, it may be that most of your presentation stays the same, but there's nothing worse than delivering a presentation. This is from the client's perspective, from the audience perspective. There's nothing worse than a presentation that was just delivered to you, but it could have just as easily been delivered to, the Concrete Association. You're in the Medical Association, and you get the sense that speaker would have delivered the same presentation to the Concrete Association. So know who your audience is. Remember, that's what that online questionnaire, that advanced questionnaire is all about. And then find ways to weave that in through your presentation. Just let them know that you know who they are and that this message is relevant to them. Number two, be friendly and cooperative. And by that, we're just talking about a smile, a please, no problem, thank you. Every now and then, just throw one of those in. It goes a long way, and a smile never fails. So just be friendly and cooperative. Number three kind of relates to that. Don't be a prima donna. And those are harsh words, but they were used by more than one planner when I was asking them about this. And even the speakers who have the best of intentions can become a bit self-absorbed at times. So just be on the lookout for this. Once you're in the spotlight, you've got the microphone, you're getting paid, all of a sudden you feel like, wow, I'm a star here. But the real star is always the meeting planner. So you always want to keep things focused on them. And I'm reminded as I say this, I'm reminded of a speaker I was working with who was just getting started out, and I booked her for an event, and I believe the fee was either $1,500 or $2,500, and it was just a small little local event. I think there were going to be about, no more than 100 people in the audience. And she sends a rider as if she's a rock star, asking for a certain kind of water, a certain kind of fruit, and this and that, and on and on. And it's not appropriate at that level. And this, by the way, is another reason to have an all-inclusive package. And then if you want these certain things, you cover it yourself. Because if you're a $75,000 speaker or even $25,000, okay, maybe you could put some of these things in there. Even then, you have to be careful with it. But definitely starting out, don't pretend to be a rock star. Don't think you're a rock star. Don't be a prima donna. You're there to take care of the client, make it as easy as possible for them. So don't be a prima donna. Number four, be available for meet and greets or receptions. This is something clients ask for because this allows a planner to add value to their attendees, which, remember, they're the star. So it brings kudos their way. Wow, really great. That was a great event. I'm glad we got to meet him or her. And the planner, of course, knows that they have you to thank for that because you did a little something extra. And that's what this is really about is, I say be available for meet and greet or reception. That's what the client said. But the bottom line is just be willing to do a little something extra. Throw something extra in there that the client, that brings more appreciation to the client. Just look out for those opportunities. Finally, the fifth thing, call upon arrival at the hotel or venue. A planner's number one fear, and this is again straight from planners, a planner's number one fear is that their speaker won't show up. So until they know that speaker is there, they're on pins and needles. And I've been at events and I've experienced this even to the point where the speaker is on site and we know that, but the speaker is not at the conference room, at the meeting room when they're supposed to be. I mean, that just drives a meeting planner crazy because their life is all about details. They've got literally hundreds of details on their minds with every event, from food service to lighting to you, the speaker, chairs, you name it. I mean, they are... I've served as a conference chair recently for our Speakers Bureau Trade Association, and I came away from that experience with a whole new appreciation for what meeting planners go through. So if you call them, and when you get to the hotel, you just say, hey, wanted to let you know I'm in town, I'm here, ready to go. That's one less thing now that they have to worry about, and man, does that go a long way, I promise you. So there you go, five things that planners want, five things that will help you get that raving testimonial. It's pretty simple, right? You might have expected it would be more, but most clients don't expect you to jump through hoops to wow them. I mean, just think about yourself. When you buy from someone, what does it take for you to feel like it was a really good experience? I know for me, it's that smile, delivering a quality product on time, saying thank you. If you do that, which seems like the absolute basics, but if you do that, I'll be pretty happy. Now, if you throw in something over the top, sure, then I might be really happy. And you as a speaker can do that. There are plenty of enhancements you can offer. But make sure you're covering these basics, and you're going to do great, I promise you. Oh, and by the way, these are the things to do on site to make a planner happy. But imagine now that you know them, think of ways you could possibly weave these into your marketing materials. Maybe you set up a page on your website that's, my commitment to the client, something like that, and you say, well, here are five things you can count on me to do, and maybe you add on a few more. Or maybe you just use them as you're talking with a planner on the phone. You know, maybe they talk to you and a couple of other speakers they're considering hiring. You talk to them and you just let them know, hey, I know what it's like to be in your shoes, so here's what I do to make sure your life is easier. That stuff goes a long way, because you know what? There are other speakers out there who speak on leadership or motivation or whatever it may be. And sometimes it comes down to these little things that make the difference. So make sure you cover these. Well, now that's pretty much what I've got for you in this session. You should be set with the basics of the business of speaking. And you can go out there, promote yourself, and do what you need to do to operate an effective speaking business. Now, obviously, we could spend, you know, 2 days going through these details and dive deeper, but you're going to learn more once you get out there and you experience the real speaking business. But I believe in keeping things as simple as possible, and these are the essentials to get you started. There's no need to worry about more than you need to worry about, no need to make things more complicated. So how is your speaking business looking right now? We've been building it one step at a time from the beginning. So are you seeing it come together? Or can you at least visualize it in your mind? Can you see how everything fits together? Can you see yourself building this successful speaking business that you dream of? That's what led you to get involved in this course in the first place. So I hope I'm helping you, and I hope it's becoming clear in your mind. So we've got one session left in this series, and in that session, I'm going to help you assemble your expertise, your experience, your story, whatever it may be, into a powerful presentation format. I am not a presentation skills coach, and even in this session, it's not going to be so much about presentation skills, but I've seen many of the world's best speakers through the years. I've had the privilege of doing that, and I'm going to share with you some of the tips and tricks I've learned with them. And I said early on that it's practice is what's really going to make you a better speaker. But I'll give you some tips on the front end to show you some things that way you don't have to spend years and years and hours up on stage. I'll give you some things from the front end you can do to really create a more powerful presentation. So that way you're thrilling your attendees just the same as you're thrilling your clients who hired you. But that's it for now. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.